Welcome to episode 7 in the series of podcasts featuring two university registrars talking about all that higher education stuff. In this instalment, Dave Hall of the Open University, Paul Greatrex of the University of Nottingham, discuss a diverse range of key issues, from controversial speakers to reindeer on campus. Universities are expected and required to be guardians of free speech, but we often find we have speakers whose views we might not like, and many might find upsetting, and ensuring we meet our legal obligations, we can end up annoying just about everyone. Universities have to bend over backwards to accommodate speakers, and yet we're berated by ministers and the media for not doing this, despite the absence of evidence to the contrary. There remains, therefore, the possibility of further legislation, but this is fraught with difficulty, and it does seem that, against the odds perhaps, the existing laws do actually work. Looking at the issue of ethical investments, this is noted as another area where student protest has, over time, really shifted the debate and led to fossil fuel divestment, although there remain different views about research collaboration with the same companies on environmentally beneficial projects. Finally, there's a salutary example of protests about the presence of visiting reindeer on campus being used to support a charity promoting environmental work, which leads inevitably into an exploration of the value of puppy rooms, the possible impact of emotional support animals, and the surprising popularity of Canada geese, despite their unpleasant deposits. Hello and welcome again to University Registrars Talking About Stuff, and we're going to talk about some more higher education issues today. With me is Dave Hall, and one of the challenges we've touched on a little bit before, Dave, is the issues around kind of protest on campus, but one of the related topics is the issue of when you get a controversial speaker on campus. Now, we've obviously got legal obligations under the prevent duty, but also under the 1986 Act, where we are required to make provision for free speech on campus. And I mean, that was all designed at a time when the then Conservative government was concerned that Tory ministers weren't being allowed to speak in universities, but it's stood the test of time, perhaps surprisingly, and is now one of the things we have to pay attention to, is ensuring that we provide for free speech within the law. But that can be really challenging when you get people turning up who you don't really like and you don't want to be associated with your university. So what's your experience of this?
It is one of the trickiest things to deal with. Freedom comes with responsibilities. We have academic freedom, and that comes with responsibilities of research integrity, and to have honestly held and evidenced views, and to engage in a constructive debate with colleagues. But when it comes to freedom of speech, you can do no more than annoy everybody, in my experience. Because on the one hand, quite rightly, universities should be guardians of free speech, that unpopular views can be expressed. Now, normally when we're thinking about that, what I have in mind, or used to have in mind, is of course unpopular views from an academic perspective, unpopular developing new models of thought or whatever it might be, which were going to be challenged by other academics. Of course, it becomes far more difficult when they are political or religious views.
Yeah.
And the most difficult is where you've got a speaker from a religious group, and it could be any religious group, and we are required, quite rightly, to allow freedom of religious expression, but those religious beliefs in a number of communities will be opposed to homosexuality. They will have very strong views about the role of women, both within their religious communities and with society generally. And where does the university draw the line between allowing freedom of expression and religious belief, and where it is going to clearly cause distress or hurt or upset to a part of the parts of the community. And there is guidance from the UK and others.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it is very, very difficult to decide what you're going to do, because you're going to irritate or upset somebody. Now, I don't think, personally, that freedom of speech and freedom of expression means that other people have to be feel that they are being bullied or victimised. But I also feel that some people are going to be upset with what some people have to say.
Yeah.
That is just in the nature of living in a free and democratic society. People have views other people don't agree with. And that is the core challenge. And universities have to allow an expression of differing views, even if we institutionally might disagree with
it. Yeah.
But that is a very unpopular perspective to take.
I mean, it is, and you, as you rightly say, you end up annoying almost everyone as a result of meeting your obligations under the law. I mean, it is ironic, it seems to me, is that we are required and do bend over backwards in order to accommodate people that we, in the scheme of things, would not normally seek to attract anywhere near our university campuses, whilst at the same time, it appears, being regularly beaten up by government for apparently not allowing free speech on our campuses, not creating an environment where, dissent and debate and disagreement can flourish in a what is quite a conducive, friendly, safe environment. So at the same time as we are providing for, everyone who does want to speak on our campuses, we are being told that we're not. And that just seems to me to be absolutely, bizarre, that there is an ongoing narrative that we are somehow stopping free speech on the basis of a couple of constantly reheated anecdotes about people who did actually speak on university campuses but are widely believed not to have been allowed to do so. The number of references we've had to, Germaine Greer not being allowed to speak because of her views, which does seem ironic, but also to an incident involving, Peter Tatchell apparently not being able to speak where he was allowed to speak. Some people were protesting about it. And a number of other cases like that, which are held up as examples of how universities are suddenly places of intolerance and anti-free speech. It just seems to me to be unfair. But then, when was anything fair in relation to university legislation these days?
You're right. There is a knee-jerk and a depressingly simplistic perspective sometimes expressed by a political masters, but I can't recall ever stopping someone speaking. We have had to engage with speakers to say that we expect them to abide by the university's policies on equality, and then they have done that. We've asked at times to see what's going to be said,
yeah.
And again, people have complied with that. We have said that there will be demonstrations, and we will permit them. We will ensure that the 2A parties will be allowed to express their views, and we will work to allow that to happen, rather than just saying it's too much trouble, to actually invest in the security that was required and what have you, to ensure that different views can be expressed. And I think that's the right way of doing things. We've asked an organisation or a speaker not to promote an organisation where there were concerns expressed by other agencies, notably in this instance the Charity Commission, about how they were operating outside of the UK.
Right.
I'm not going to name names because it's an ongoing and difficult case. as it is.
But if the Charity Commission involved, it's serious.
And we don't always agree, I'll be honest with you, we don't always agree if the police take a view.
Yeah.
Sometimes the police will take a view about whether there's going to be public disorder and whether they feel that their resources are going to be called upon. I don't always agree with them. I think it is important that the university reaches its own conclusions about how it's going to accommodate free speech while at the same time ensuring that communities which have traditionally been and continue to be discriminated against don't feel frightened or bullied or put upon. So that it's a difficult thing to balance.
It is, and I think the difference now with, you know, even a few years ago, is that I think we feel a greater obligation, because of concerns, particularly from the student body, to make appropriate provision for those who will be upset and will feel marginalised by things that people will say, to ensure that actually we are protecting and supporting them as well. But what they have to understand is that our obligations to provide for free speech do, I'm afraid, you know, trump their desire not to be offended. And that's life, I'm afraid. But that doesn't mean that we don't care about them and want to look after them. We do. We absolutely do, because they're valued members of our community as well. The only instances we've had where we haven't stopped a speaker, but what's happened is that someone's invited a speaker without going through the procedures, because, you know, we have to have notice, because we have to be able to ensure that we're going to make appropriate provision. If they are a controversial speaker, that we've got appropriate security, they're in the right room, we are carrying out appropriate checks to ensure that they are properly protected, etc., etc., and notifying the police if required. So occasionally we've had to defer an invitation to an individual because the person that invited him didn't go through the right channels. You can't just invite someone, you know, to speak 24 hours later. I mean, it's just not, it's not on, no matter how excited and passionate your student group is.
And if we get notice, it's all, as we should do, it gives us an opportunity as well to engage with any groups that who might be offended by what might be said. So, and I think they appreciate that the university is showing up with us. There's somebody who's going to speak on campus, and they may express views that you're going to be unhappy with. My advice would be to get out there and get your voice heard, and show that those sorts of views are not tolerated by you.
Yeah, and here's your protest zone here.
Yeah.
I think it is difficult territory, and I wouldn't be surprised if there is further legislation forthcoming in this area at some point in the near future. Although I have to say, I think it's fraught with difficulty, simply because we have, you know, we have a raft of existing provisions that we have to address, you know, around the 1986 Act, and as yet they haven't actually been found wanting. In reality, you know, there's been a few marginal cases, but on the whole, they've achieved what their government intended them to achieve in originally proposing them, which is to provide for free speech on campus. And I do think that in what is a really, you know, genuinely febrile and intolerant media and social media environment, you know, actually universities are, you know, oases of, you know, calm and rationality. Relatively speaking, and actually do our best for everyone on campus, no matter how controversial their views might be.
There is a question. Are there any times in which, what are other times rather, when a speaker, when you'd feel comfortable banning a speaker or saying, no, that is not... Yeah, you're not going to be talking about that on this campus. We're not going to be risk being associated with it.
Simply, you know, the fact that you don't like the reputational association isn't good enough grounds, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah. And if you, to what extent has Nottingham extended its thinking around its values and ethics and that sort of thing around investments and the urging of group students and other groups to... that organisations should disinvest either for ethical or climate-related reasons?
Well, I mean, you know, you do get quite regular protests on that topic. I mean, you know, we have taken the step as an institution of divesting from... having had a long-held position of not investing a whole range of investments we regarded as unethical, from, you know, gambling to... pornography to you know, weapon sales, etc. We have taken the decision to, you know, effectively largely divest from, or entirely divest from fossil fuels. I'm slightly embarrassed. I don't know exactly where we've got to in that, but we did take it quite a while ago. However, having said that, our investment was not significant. I mean, it was relatively minor. But there have been, you know, protests over the years about that. There are regular protests against companies that, you know, many students believe are, you know, are polluters or are involved in the arms trade and such like. We get regular protests of that kind. You know, again, that's, you know, we talked previously about student protest, but that's part of the rich tapestry of university life, is that students will protest about things that they feel strongly about, and it's their absolute entitlement to do so within the law. And they have undoubtedly been successful, you know, across the, you know, the sector in changing universities' approach to investment. It's taken time, but, you know, I think it has undoubtedly shifted quite significantly. What's your experience been?
What I was thinking of, again, it was another moral dilemma, is the we have disinvested from a number of companies, but there are some companies where we are working with them on research.
Yep.
And looking at greener forms of energy.
Yep.
And these will be fossil fuel, yep, producing companies. And I think there has to be an opportunity for them to reorganise their business and to use research and science to help them to do that. So I would take money from companies like BP and that, where they are seeking to, you know, a long-term strategy of turning away from fossil fuels.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a difference between choosing to invest capital reserves in companies which you believe are damaging the environment, and working with companies on research to make the world environmentally better, which is, you know, what you and us and many other institutions are engaged in. And effectively, they are investing directly in things which should bring environmental benefit, in collaboration with our expertise. And I think that's right and proper that we do engage with that activity. Not everyone sees it that way, though.
No, and it's not. And but there have been other difficult decisions where colleagues have got very, and the students in particular, got very concerned about something the university might be doing. A couple of Christmases ago, the problem arrived on my desk, which was that we'd got reindeers on campus. And I hadn't been aware.
They'd arrived spontaneously,
Well, it was Christmas, so maybe, yeah, I shouldn't have been as surprised as I was that we had reindeers. But so the question was that we were tolerating putting animals in an unnatural situation, and, you know, having members of the public stand around and giggle at them, sort of thing. So the discussion again had with the group and the owners of the reindeers was that they would not be dressed up like Santa's little helpers.
Right, hang on a second. So their original purpose was an entertainment purpose associated with the festive season, that they were providing joy to local kids.
Exactly. So I was trying to avoid the...
on campus.
To it was not entertainment, but yes, they're on campus. Yes, they were... I think it was a couple of them.
I think it was a commercial
and Dasher. I think that
commercial opportunity for.
For the university. It was a charity actually. That looked after reindeers. And
again,
this is my argument with colleagues who were very upset that these reindeers were there. Well, they weren't. First of all, they weren't reindeers that had been, you know, flown from Lapland, but they were being looked after by a charity who was supporting the. Protecting the environment of the reindeers, you know, the natural environment in the Arctic Circle and that. So that was why they were there. But obviously the people were upset that they were used as a sort of petting, or looked like they were there just for petting. But I think it was there for good reasons, to help people understand the reindeers' and their environment and the threats to their environment. But the decision was they must not be dressed up like Santa's little helpers, but they're as animals in their own right.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I can imagine the kind of protests that might should, but I mean, there are many, many examples of animals being brought to university campuses. I mean, puppy rooms are now a staple at every university student union at a time of exams when students have the opportunity to relax with a small dog. I mean, I, you know, obviously, and those arrangements are managed well because it can be quite stressful for the dogs as well if they go for extended periods of cuddling by stressed out students. So, but those are, you know, normal parts. And, you know, many other animals have been tried as well as part of this. A couple of US universities frequently use llamas for the same purposes, and which, you know, I think is, you know, and none of them were dressed up as far as I could tell from the pictures, but they didn't seem to have attracted quite the protest that your reindeer did. But these things are quite commonplace. I mean, we've had miniature ponies as well. They've also been brought to university campuses to provide calm and peace to stressed out students.
Farm animals brought up, like sheep and pigs.
I've heard of pigs being involved, but I've not seen any on our campus yet. And then also there's the kind of wider issue of individuals having their own emotional support animals, because that's increasingly common now, I've not actually encountered this yet, for students to be requesting to bring their emotional support animal who they say that they need in order to be able to carry on their studies. It is much more common in the US than it is in the UK, but traditionally UK halls in particular do not allow, we don't allow, goldfish, not that you should really allow goldfish, because that's not very fair on the goldfish these days, is it?
No,
we don't allow that. But, any pets of any kind are traditionally not allowed in university halls, but
they should be hamster-free zones. I mean, there's no excuse for...
Well, there isn't, except where you've got, the need for emotional support, and there is a reasonably strong case to be made, I think, that some people genuinely have an attachment to an animal which makes them, enables them to get through their study or their work more easily. I mean, I can tell you're slightly sceptical about this, but it is, it is something. So I think, that it will happen before too long that, some universities will start dedicating, halls of residence as, emotional support animal halls. You're just looking for a way to get the reindeer back.
I think we should have an experience of animals, but only if it leads to us doing something productive about their environment in the wild.
Right. Okay.
And I think just using them for petting and that is, these sheep were decently treated and then they were decently shot. It's sort of, I'm just not sure I'm entirely see the moral.
I'm told they all go back to the farm,
but they don't go back to the farm for.
That could be
to live out happy and normal lives.
But of course, many universities do, of course, have animals on them which they don't necessarily want to have on them. I mean, we've got well over 100 Canada geese, who I find deeply irritating because of the waste that they leave behind and the fact that they make large parts of the grassed area of the university unusable.
I thought you meant litter. I thought they'd littered.
No, I'm talking about their crap. they crap a seventh of their own body weight every single day, and it makes a hell of a mess. Now, I get cross about that. However, our students and visitors to campus think they're charming. And they parade around the campus getting in the way of cars and, honking at people. And most, residents of the campus actually like them. So I'm very much in a minority of one on this. But I get rid of them tomorrow.
It sounds much better to have a problem with Canada geese than, wasn't it, Warwick, where they had a problem with ants? Yeah, there were hundreds of ants.
Killer ants.
They were digging under the foundations of the buildings.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that one. They did have their own goose problem at Warwick, where they had some geese who were attacking students, which were very aggressive geese. No, I didn't know about the ants. So they actually caused a building to collapse, did they?
I don't know whether it completely collapsed. I think they just nibbled away at a couple of bricks, but it was enough to cause alarm in the estates department.
Well, one can only imagine. Well, I'm sure there are many other animal-related incidents that we will no doubt find out more about in due course. But in the meantime, thank you, Dave, for another entertaining discussion from geese to controversial speakers. Thanks.
Can we put our clothes back on now?
That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course, and if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.